you guys. It's Andy's Girls. It's an Andy's Girls summer house reunion finale extravaganza. I say that with such mourning in my heart. Oh, also, it's episode whatever. Leave me alone. And I have to tell you that I'm sure there'll be an uncensored extended episode out tomorrow. I'm recording this around midnight, normal working hours here in the cloth. And I will cherish and hold, I might dangle the carrot of when I will watch that extended episode. Maybe I'll watch it in like 5 minute spurts or something, because I don't ever want to let go of this season. I don't know how else to say it, but like, I feel like maybe recording 10 to 15 upcoming Summer House episodes, it deserves it. It deserves our love and support. This episode was kind of confounding. I watched it once, reacted on IG stories, my favorite place to melt down. And then I was like, am I watching it a second time? Absolutely. Fuck yes. I definitely am. I gave it a little bit less attention at that point because I feel like I was still marinating my thoughts from the first go around. And let me tell you what, I was concerned after last week's episode that I wasn't hard enough on West. I had that conversation after I recorded with friend of the pod, Kate Arthur, who I then recorded an episode with that you guys listened to a couple of days ago. And I was like, Kate, I kind of feel like I wasn't hard enough. Like, I came out of that. I don't remember what I said. It's truly a fever dream, especially when I record solo episodes, because they are so obviously stream of consciousness. But for whatever reason, my takeaway from recording that app was like, I was too generous. But the feedback that I got from people was like, no, you were, we heard those whispers of rage that you expressed over the course of 1700 minutes. And then, you know, West has had an interesting week on social. He had another article with the New York Times. I think the New York Times is having a little bit of a second season curse, Bravo style, where I think, you know, and God bless the New York Times. I am a friend of the New York Times. I'm an online subscriber, in fact. And so I think they got a little high off their own supply with the Scandoval coverage. Doing the feature on Anne was surprising to me so soon. Like, the fact that she went viral and they immediately were like, let's interview Anne was fast. Listen, we stan Anne. This is the house of Anne, but it was a little surprising. So then they, you know, they drop an article with Carl. I don't even fucking know if there was a separate music section that came in the form of a CD, we would be hearing, you know, the executive editor singing What Would Jesse Solomon Do? So they did do a piece on West as America's Sweetheart a week ago or whatever, and then whenever it actually came out. And then they did, in fact, do a follow-up, because I think they bought into the dream so many of us had, the true American dream, that West was here to rescue us all. And so when it turns out he's got some fuckboy energy in there, they did do a follow-up that's like, hey, West, how's your week been? Which I thought was fascinating, I read. And then Nick Viall had West on his show, and I was like, this stupid motherfucker. Like, I'm just going to have to watch him again, meaning West. So I went West and watched that before starting the reunion tonight, because I was like, oh, if he says something and it feels meaningful, I'm going to want to hear it, because I know I was hot last week, but if this stupid motherfucker has some nuance, I'm going to want to listen to it. I'm going to want to hear it. I'm going to want to take it in. And I watched his interview for a solid 45 minutes. And then at a certain point, I was like, you know what? I feel comfortable walking away. I learned nothing from this. What I learned is that he thinks people who want to do threesomes are probably not attractive enough or fuckable enough on their own, I guess. And like, half talk about Sierra, and then Nick's apologizing to West, I guess, on behalf of all formerly late 20s plus, not spiritual, literal straight men. I guess that, you know, West was really challenged and we should give him more grace, which, sure. Is West a total piece of shit? No. Is West deserving of an understanding that, like, comparing him directly to Sandoval is perhaps not appropriate in this context? Sure. But the idea of, like, removing grace from Sierra in which to afford it for West is a weird take. Nick on his social early in the week, or I forget if it was a clip that I didn't end up seeing, because again, I tapped out after 45 minutes because I was like, reunion? Let me tap in. But there's something that his account either posted or was a clip where it was criticizing Sierra for not listening to West when he told her who he was. And the language used on it or on Instagram was fuck around and find out. And you know what? Being a woman creator, listening to an array of straight men and also women saying that West isn't deserving of all of the hate, but I guess he certainly was deserving of all of the praise. Like, the weird recalibration here. Like, is West the literal devil? No. Is he complicated? Yes. Did he hurt Sierra? Yes. Was he complaining about bajillions of majority women viewers giving him oodles and oodles and oodles of praise? He was not upset about that. He was not upset about the waves of attention that he has received for months from people saying, finally, the casting is right. And the casting is still right, by the way. But finally, here's like a good man. Finally, here's someone who we feel like is gonna treat a lady right. He wasn't upset about that. We've heard enough from Paige on tonight's part two, quasi under her breath. And on last week's episode, that like some of his reactions here are very much connected to how he's looking on the show. Should he be proud and happy with the fact that people are loving him? Absolutely. But when we go from one side of the spectrum to the other, and we're not acknowledging that everybody was very much okay with absolute total devotion and adoration on one side, and then we go to the other side where we're like, this is too much attention. I mean, it's a little inconsistent there. What's the measurement scale always changes for men. It's always like they're not deserving of this, but we don't really necessarily have that same kind of conversation with women. And I've had some interesting conversations with people I know in my life of recent, of hearing, you know, Ariana's not a real feminist was one conversation where I was like, what's happening? And then another one, Sierra should have known better than to date a man who wouldn't treat her well. And I'm like, what's up? And I just kind of feel a little weird about it because I'm then watching the episode, I'm watching part two. Did I even press record? Literally, where am I? I'm watching part two and I'm watching Sierra break down. I'm watching her show more vulnerability. I'm watching her try not to because she's obviously still so fucking hurt. I'm watching her say it's fine while like holding in the tears. And then I'm hearing West say, my feelings were genuine. I expressed myself too late to figure stuff out. Did we get any clarity on that? What does that mean? I expressed myself too late to figure things out. Exactly what did you express? Did you say, I want to be your boyfriend? Like 3 weeks after she said, go fuck yourself. Like literally, what does that mean? Because you're telling us so many different reasons why this didn't work out. So I'm trying to understand what you wanted to work out. Because the way you're saying I expressed myself too late to figure things out makes me think that you wanted a commitment to commit yourself to her. Like literally, we're dangling these carrots. You know, I'm just a lady on the Upper East Side trying to make sense of it all. He says, I'm sorry for hurting you. I believe him. I believe that he's sorry for hurting her. I believe that West is enough of a human person to sit on that couch and understand he hurt this person's feelings. He's enough of a fucking person to not say, I'm sorry if I hurt you. I didn't mean it, blah, blah, blah. In part two, he's like, full stop. I'm sorry. I apologize. all fine and good. But then I go on Instagram this past week and I'm seeing, you know, listen, he got a lot of negative fucking comments on his social. And I am sure, as happens in every circumstance on and off Broadway, that people went too far. There's no doubt in my mind. And also, he's not acknowledging any of them except for liking a couple comments, which you can see on his social, where people are like, you know, you didn't deserve it. You did nothing wrong. He's liking comments of people saying he did nothing wrong. So I'm like, wait a second. Which West am I supposed to believe? The West who's on a podcast, you know, shooting the shit about whatever and not really interested in going deep, which I get. Like, I understand he might not have been in that headspace. I don't begrudge him for that. The West I'm seeing on the show, where he seems to be, while using sometimes confusing language, seems to recognize he hurt this woman's feelings. He's taking responsibility for that and then completely backing out of it in real time. And then saying whatever the fuck he said to the New York Times of like, it wasn't a real relationship, whatever. It doesn't entirely make sense to me. And I find it frustrating. And the other thing here, maybe this doesn't apply as much to the West Sierra dynamic as it does to what we watched happen with Amanda and Kyle and Lindsay and Carl. But it feels like the show is maybe taking for granted that we have an understanding of who the favorites are. I kind of know walking into that room how Andy might be feeling, but I shouldn't know how he's going to pose questions. And that's like maybe a little bit of an Andy thing, but I think it's much more of a production question concern. And it's the thing that I've raised so many times before, including, I guess, an hour and a half ago when we were watching the Vanderpump Rules reunion, which is that it feels that a lot of the conversation, a lot of the questions, a lot of the critique that's being framed by production in, you know, organizing and writing out the reunion is being done by men. And spoiler alert, you can be a straight man, a gay man, however you identify, and still communicate and live this world through the lens of misogyny. I know that's going to be shocking to some people to hear, but sexism still exists. It exists regardless of a person's sexuality. And it's frustrating to see some of the gender politics play out behind the scenes for these shows in a way that does not challenge bad men or does not challenge the behavior of bad actors. It's frustrating to watch, like, because I think to myself, Lala, for whatever fucking reason, is coming into that room focused on dragging Ariana. Ariana's going to be dragged. Why aren't we having a counter here? Like, if the show wants a specific lens to focus on criticizing Lindsay, don't you have enough awareness that the cast is going to do that on your behalf? Why are you doubling down? Why isn't there a counter here? Why is Lindsay being challenged so much but not Kyle? If we're talking about people behaving poorly with their partners, Lindsay, people have every right to be upset, both friends of Carl and castmates, as well as the direction of production, to focus negative feedback and critique on Lindsay. Every right to do it. She deserves it. But why aren't we focusing on Kyle calling his wife a fucking bitch? Why aren't we focusing on the fact that his, like, workaround for his behavior and why he wanted her to stay in Skinny Girl and why he, his reactions to why he reacted poorly? Why isn't anybody countering that? He literally said Kyle understood that he knew that his wife was going through mental health challenges with anxiety and depression. And he is telling us on these godforsaken couches that I love so much, why wasn't this reunion 15 parts long? We deserved it. We've been through a lot. Why is he saying he's going on the couch and saying he reacted poorly on the show when she said she wanted to go on her own, find her own identity, whatever else, because he didn't want her to take on too much? He's now connecting an understanding of what Amanda was experiencing and being challenged by when it comes to mental health. He's now connecting that to why he didn't want her to leave, which would have alleviated a lot of the stress and potential pressure and anxiety she obviously is telling us she was feeling. He's saying he's like, let's connect those dots. Why is nobody following up on that? Like, am I the only one that watched the episode? I know production did because they goddamn edited it. They shot it. They cast it. They edited it. They were more involved than I was. Why is nobody saying, what an interesting, unless you want to frame Kyle as good. Kyle has too much ownership on the direction of the show. And I'm not being like literal. I'm just saying his opinion matches what we're watching on TV too much when he's not being held to account. So if Kyle dislikes Lindsay and has some history and some shit with her, like, let's litigate that. Let's have that conversation. But we can't have this. I mean, obviously we can because we quite literally just did. We cannot have this moment on tonight's episode where he's saying that Lindsay is delusional in what she's saying and how she's criticizing her partner, and not talk about the way that Kyle was belligerent in repeatedly dragging his wife. So he's now telling us, I was aware of her mental health challenges. Let's connect those dots. I was aware of her mental health challenges. Why did you then call her lazy? If you have an understanding of what she was experiencing and how she was expressing it, why are you calling her lazy repeatedly? Why are you calling her a bitch? Why are you saying you are her babysitter? How does any of that work? How does that make sense? It feels like the lens here is always when it comes, not always, I mean, like, I'm literally talking of two shows, but listen, we all have memories. We can go a little bit further back if we desire. Maybe not for me tonight, but Kyle deserved to be dragged for obvious, repeated, gross behavior, but wasn't. Tom deserved to be dragged for obvious, repeated, gross behavior, but wasn't. Instead, the lens shifted not to Amanda, an icon and angel, my love, shifted to Lindsay, who did deserve to be criticized in some ways, and in Lala and Ariana's case, to Ariana and Katie. It just feels like either some of these behind the scenes decisions are happening and people are putting way too much trust in the fact that the audiences are majority women and that's enough. Like, that feels like the explanation that I'm hearing. Because we know these shows are created with majority women casts or with majority women audiences, that's enough of a woman's perspective. That's what I'm feeling. Or I'm feeling like there are not enough women in this room when some of these narrative decisions are being made. There just aren't. I know that there are women that work at Bravo. There are incredible, smart, accomplished women that work at Bravo. But I don't know what the fuck is going on with, like, who's producing what, who's the actual showrunner here, who's responsible for some of this, like, line producing and stuff. It does not feel consistent with the audience. I feel like there is a large portion of the audience, which PS does not just include women when it comes to wanting to hear more of women's stories told through a woman's lens. That's not just women having this conversation who have that feeling, who have that opinion. But I'm not seeing represented in the way some of these conversations are taking place. And it's a loss for the audience because, like, misogyny, sexism, all that good stuff, it's always going to win. It's always going to be the majority in society. That's how these things are run. That's the finish line on a lot of this. Unfortunately, when we get a counter to that, it's great. Like, the fact that Bravo exists and we get to hear and praise and celebrate and, of course, you know, criticize and drag women as important and being in charge of their own stories at, God forbid, 50 plus, which is so shockingly rare, including in reality TV, a wild circumstance where women's stories are no longer interesting while men's stories continue. Wild, wild stuff. There is an importance and an aspect of Housewives that I really genuinely think is great and should be commended when it comes to, like, we're amplifying women's stories. Women are, you know, running the show, but they're not editing these episodes. They're not, at the end of the day, making the decisions of how their stories are going to be told, and our understanding, our opinions are formed by the edit. We don't get to see the hundreds and thousands of hours of film that's shot, depending on what show it is that we're focusing on. We get to see the edited episode. It would be helpful if they tried to even this out. It would be helpful if there was a little bit more gender parity on exactly who is being dragged, because there's a forgetfulness sometimes, or maybe it's just like, they probably know that Kyle did too much, so why do we need to ask him? Well, then why are you focusing so much on Lindsay? Can't we kind of even some of this out? I felt like Kyle got off, like, in a pretty fascinating way, considering the fact that if you watched part two and had never seen Summer House before, first off, how dare you? That's like at least a misdemeanor in my heart. If you watched part two, I would be thinking that Kyle was the one that Lindsay was dating and then they broke up. What the fuck is going on with Kyle answering questions about Carl's relationship with Lindsay? If I was Carl, and I know they had a great history in working together, but if I was Carl listening to this, watching this play out, not interrupting, not being like, hey, buddy, I got it. It's my life. That like pent up frustration would be resetting and starting anew. If you watch, which I could not more highly recommend, the after show on Bravo's YouTube for Summer House, it's impeccable A++ prestige. I don't know if an episode went up tonight. It's entirely possible. Again, I'm recording this at like bajillion o'clock a.m. But if you watch the episode from like maybe last week or the week before, you know, the interviewer is asking Carl how he felt about the breakup or some specific circumstance with Lindsay. And Kyle cuts in and apologizes and interjects on his behalf. It's like the kitchen scene, I think, in the Hamptons, how it was so awkward. And Kyle is cutting in to Carl talking about like the breakdown and breakup of his relationship with his fiance. And Kyle is interjecting with how Kyle felt about watching that play out. And Kyle was way too fucking comfortable on part two in talking about how he felt about Carl and Lindsay's relationship. I understand that a part, an important part of being a cast member on any of these shows, especially at a reunion, is sharing your opinion. I totally get it. It's super fucking key. It can determine whether a person keeps or loses their job. The most historic example of that that I always think of is Portia. Portia was going to be one and done, but she showed up at that fucking reunion and she goddamn killed it. The Cordell monologue, everybody remembers. It's her vocal inflection. I could hear it right now in my head. Like, what would Jesse Solomon do? Rewatch Portia's monologue on that Atlanta reunion episode, because it was so key. Andy has talked about it since. Portia got her job renewal because of that monologue and her performance at the reunion. So I get that Kyle's going to interject. And honestly, that's also Kyle's personality, is like he's going to be the guy to share his opinion because his opinion demands to be heard. But we are talking about, I mean, if we're talking in show talk, this is your friend's chance. Is he not center stage for maybe the first time in a minute? Let this guy fucking have a couple lines of dialogue, obviously. I'm literally not making a joke. Like, let him have a couple lines in the script. You know, like, let him say a couple things. Why are you cutting in? And also, it's fascinating. I know that there are people who feel a certain way about the fact that the rest of the cast is not super pro Lindsay. I think that's in some way probably realistic. She has not gotten along with several people in the cast. There have been rumors about her behavior behind the scenes that I know literally nothing about. She might not be at some points the easiest person to get along with. Obviously, it feels like the cast thinks that she's manipulative at any point in the game. I think we got the best case scenario in how the rest of the cast, especially the women, rallied behind her during the like finale episode. We're obviously seeing some tensions pop up during the reunion. I know that there is some upset about that, and I don't know what to tell you, except I'm not like viscerally frustrated watching it. I kind of feel like, yeah, this makes sense. These people have not gotten along for such a period of time that it would be unrealistic to me to see Paige do a complete 180 and be like, now we're friends. Obviously, members of the cast do not trust Lindsay. Another reason, by the way, to make sure that other questions are being asked, because if you know that like Paige and Sierra, for example, do not typically fuck with Lindsay, they're going to hold her to account. You've already done that job. You can check that off the list. let's do some other stuff while we're here. Let's add some extra layers. So I know that there are people, and again, I understand, I know that there are people who are like, what the fuck? You know, I thought this was like a girl power kind of scenario. And I just genuinely, my honest reaction to that is, these are people who have not gotten along for years, who behaved, I thought, in the best possible way during the finale.
Now that the temperature is rising, and I don't just mean the heat coming between Lindsay versus Carl, it can be really difficult to get my hair under control. I have like this wavy, curly, frizzy, natural texture that I genuinely love, but it can be really difficult to find a product that works for my hair without feeling heavy and genuinely, genuinely counteracts the frizziness that I get naturally if I don't blow out my hair. That's why I love Way. Whether your strands are fine, medium, or like mine, thick, Way has shampoo and conditioner that's your type. I love the detox shampoo because it does exactly that. It detoxes your hair. And because I am a spiritual blonde and do have some color processing, the shampoo helps clean away all the schmutz that accumulates, leaving my hair feeling lighter and better than it did before. God bless that apple cider vinegar. And yes, for that frizz, I rely on the anti-frizz cream. I put it in after I shower, do a little scrunch of my hair, and I'm good to go. Way keeps me looking like me, just a little bit elevated.
Jesse Solomon, have you heard my call?
If you want volume, Way's fine hair and conditioner will give you a lift without weighing you down. Not sure what your type is? Take Way's hair quiz to find out. Wash your way to healthier hair with shampoos and conditioners made just for you. Go to theouai.com and use code Andy for 15% off your entire purchase. That's theouai.com, code Andy. After watching Lala and Sandoval's behavior on the Vanderpump Rules reunion, I developed such an intense thirst. I guess it's contagious when you're talking about Vanderpump Rules. So thank goodness for Fiji Water. Fiji Water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the United States. It has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH, and unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. In fact, Fiji Water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two, giving it signature soft, smooth taste. As someone who has spoken on the pod time and time again about the importance of having electrolytes, especially this summer, Fiji fits into my lifestyle so well. Before going on a little bit of a stroll, just a short one in these warmer summer temps, I grab my Fiji Water and I am out the door. Unlike some other premium bottled waters in the market, there's no ingredient statement on Fiji Water because there's nothing added to the water itself. Fiji Water is Earth's finest water. And as someone who's currently deep in the throes of watching Bravo's Finest Television, also known as Summer House, I know that having Fiji Water by my side is keeping me hydrated and refreshed. So Lala, take that. I know I'm one of many people who struggles with the all-or-nothing fads. Juice cleanses, soup diets, keto, hours and hours of cardio. If this cycle sounds familiar to you, and it definitely does to me, there's a better, more sustainable way to lose weight. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And let's talk about the big O, obesity. 4 in 10 Americans struggle with it, so there should be no shame in the weight game. It's okay to talk about weight loss and talking about it in a way that feels healthy. With Row, you can sign up online from the comfort of your own home. That's right, the people's couch. This means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI, and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Before being prescribed medication, patients must complete an online medical visit, lab test, and qualify for medication based on their BMI, lab results, medical history, and the discretion of a Ro-affiliated healthcare provider.
And now we are talking about and unpacking some of the layers here of a lack of trust that people have with each other. Lindsay's talking about it. She talks about it in the, you know, the first fight at the beginning of the season happened because she had jumped into a car in an Uber or Lyft. I don't know why they like made a joke out of that one line. I didn't understand it. And I have not been to the Hamptons anywhere near enough to remember if like, does the Hamptons not have Uber? Some places it's like they don't have Uber, but they do have Lyft. I didn't understand what that joke was, or some kind of like sponsorship something. Anywho, that Lindsay got into this cab and then got flustered and upset because she felt like the women were going to use this as something against her by choosing to be with the men. Was she wrong in thinking that way? We have no idea. I don't know. It's entirely possible that people who already did not trust each other, who are back to filming the show, might have, yeah, picked some sort of fight or felt maybe disrespected or felt paranoid that this was an indicator Lindsay wouldn't want to fuck with them this season. All of that's entirely possible. And I think it's also kind of realistic to expect. What's important to me is how the reunion ended. The reunion ended with Andy absolutely fucking up Kyle's hair. Shock. I watched it over and over again because I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it was so bad. Everybody was confident. Obviously, he had gotten counsel to cut above the scrunchie. And also, is putting a scrunchie on a head a hard thing? Like, Lindsay was shocked that he knew. Do people who don't have kids who are not wearers of scrunchies not know how the scrunchie works? I'm genuine. It's sort of like a rubber band, is it not, with material? It's been a minute since I've worn a scrunchie. I guess I'm part of the generation that thinks of that Sex and the City episode with Carrie and that lady from the South. Spoiler alert. Like, scrunchies are not like great, but now I know that they're amazing because, you know, as you know, a spiritually mid-20s plus, I know that the youth are like team scrunchie 1997 energy, and I love that for us because it was a great time, especially for fashion. But, you know, with the scrunchie of it all, why is he cutting above it? Cutting above was a wrong choice, right? Should he not have cut below? Should we start with like taking out as little hair as possible? I don't know. Or maybe it was the angle of how Andy cut Kyle's mullet off. I don't think it super worked out. It was so funny. I laughed so hard. I laughed repeatedly throughout this episode. But what I loved about that was, you know, the episode's ending with Andy cutting off Kyle's hair, both hair that, you know, needed to go and also some hair that needed to stay. And I just literally, Paige was about to call, I don't even know what, Stephanie, what's her name? That gal that I love. Paige is talking about, you know, isn't it great? We were all in that bed and, you know, Lindsay fell asleep in my bed and they're having these moments where they're smiling. I think we're headed in a good direction. I think there's always going to be tension. There's always going to be Lindsay, you're a piece of shit. No, I'm not. You maybe are or whatever, but I'm definitely not. That's always going to happen. There's always going to be some ruffling of feathers, lack of trust, and looking for fallout conflict that's going to exist in some of the relationships that Lindsay has with people in the house. A lot of that's deserved, just historically, for dear old Linz, who I will side with, like, when I, you know, want to, when I desire. But what was important to me was like they were ending on a good note. That was the thing about Summer House that was great. That was also great about the reunion. There were moments of LOL. There was a light. I do think that this upcoming season is going to be fucking incredible. Especially if Lindsay brings on her non-Peacock subscribing boyfriend. Can you imagine? I don't think this is a great idea. What's that called when you have like exposure therapy? Someone please, before the show picks up filming, which has to be any day now,
please, please send that man a 2-week trial. We just need to have him ever so slightly aware of maybe who he's dating, maybe how the show works, maybe how some of these people are going to behave. I just think in this specific circumstance, it would be helpful, healthy for him to know just a little bit of what his long-term girlfriend partner of a couple months, but maybe forever and ever, amen, you know, what she's like maybe in this environment and what everybody else is as well. Because if you come in there and you're like, they seem great because they shake my hand, sir, wait 6 hours. Everybody's going to be naked in the pool. Someone's going to be screaming and there might be a fire out back. Like, people are going to burn stuff down on Summer House. It's why we love it so much. There is always a fire, often from within. So please, someone help that man to prep, because he's going to be making some sandwiches. I'm going to tell you that much. You know, I know I'm going to be doing upcoming episodes about Summer House, but as always, this is, of course, taking a little bit of a walk in the ramble. I do have some feels. So I know that there's something happening on social when it comes to like gossip about Kyle. I don't totally get it. And I have asked my pal Face Reality 16 to essentially sit me down and tutor me. Even after going through all of the videos, I was like, so what happened? This happened. There was like a video that came out of Kyle interacting with a lady that I guess was taken in November. Leva, who I guess Kyle was with because he was out of town on a lover boy adventure, scavenger hunt, looking for customers and fun. I guess it looked like he was having an intimate style conversation with a lady. Leva from Southern Charm, who he was with, then reached out to, again, pal, a friend of the pod, Face Reality 16, and Eliza, and said essentially like, no, everything was okay. She's a friend of ours. He was just talking to her. Literally nothing happened and he wasn't drunk. Then there were rumors, I guess, that Kyle was like out to dinner, cheersing to a maybe separation, which could that have been a joke? Entirely possible. Could it have been misheard? Entirely possible. Then there was a demois. It's been quite a week for Kyle. Then there's was a demois blind item. The subject title was "Let's Cook." The message: this Bravo entrepreneur turned DJ was seen getting extra close with someone who wasn't his partner during a night out following an event for his company. Is another breakup in the cards this summer? Summer is capitalized with S. Maybe she has reason to not want him out on the town until 4 a.m. I mean, there was a lot there. The DJ joke about hobbies. The fact that the subject line was "Let's cook." Summer House capitalized 4 a.m. a lot. Breakup, you know, things are happening. So that was a blind, I guess. Jamois came out after the fact and said, my bad, I just put that up because I thought it was about James Kennedy. Which, if you're skimming blinds, I genuinely understand, because who else is a DJ on Bravo? Well, spoiler alert, Kyle is now as well, because we've heard about his new hobby, which he's making into a thing. Good for him. Wish there was room for others in that household to develop some hobbies as well. Hopefully we'll get to it. So there was that blind item. Who knows? Might be goss, might not be, might have been, you know, his shaking his tail feather another year of his marriage. Who knows if it was this one? I'm just saying he's having a hot week on social. So it's fascinating to see some of his behavior on the show. He's a little, it's not just like aggressive. It feels like he's running a little bit of a purity campaign directly against Lindsay and saying, how could you do these things? How dare you call your partner Cocaine Carl? Well, first off, absolutely, that was a complete fuck up. The fact that she said it repeatedly, not great. She took ownership of it. Carl very clearly expressed why it's incredibly harmful to challenge someone's recovery and to weaponize it. Obviously, members of the cast were really upset on Carl's behalf. People care about Carl. People also care about Lindsay, but it's just, it's a different kind. They will be there for her to support her, but in other cases, they may not trust her and agree with her opinion of what's taken place. She still has the right to express feelings in other areas, but her constantly questioning his sobriety was not appropriate. It was, to me, a shocking moment when we watched it at the beginning of the season. I kind of thought, game over then. And as I think it was Sierra who said this, but it might have been Paige, like at that point, like that's an insta breakup. Like you could break up on those grounds, and I think people would have an understanding why. And I have to tell you, as a podcaster who does not struggle with drug or alcohol addiction, but has some other mental health challenges around addiction with like ED stuff, I don't love it. The number of times that I've gotten messages from people who've weaponized my eating disorder when sending me some form of critique, it is in fact extremely harmful. I wish that people were less comfortable referencing vulnerable experiences and stories that are shared on this podcast when trying to make a point. In some cases, it's well-intended. I would think in some part of Lindsay's brain, she's thinking, I either genuinely thought something was going on or I just was absolutely fucking wrong. But the thing of it is, like, this is the whole intent versus impact. At certain points, the intent doesn't matter. The impact, when you're talking to anyone who has experienced, vocalized or not, having a history or pattern with addiction or any other mental health challenge, is ideally not to reference that. It's like a little bit of a trust circle sometimes of like, we're going to share these things, but please be gentle with them. And I have felt, while certainly not anywhere close to the scale or circumstance of what Carl has gone through, I've genuinely found myself connecting with him at that moment because I was like, I have in my own little corner, my own little world, have experienced that too from people who had positive intentions or not. That's not the only thing that has been used, but that is certainly something when it comes to talking about, again, addiction and mental health, therapy, recovery, that I just, I was thankful to see Lindsay taking responsibility of it in that moment. I was annoyed that Kyle was going in so hard in shock about how dare she do this to her partner when he did that to his best friend, a partner in a business sense, a partner in a friendship sense. He was not a romantic partner, a fiance to Carl, but he certainly did bring up Carl being high and kind of out of it on coke. Was that not at the beginning of last season of Summer House, which he apologized for? He was horrified by his behavior, but he seems to have really selective memory when it comes to Lindsay. And listen, I know that people have compared when it comes to, like, you know, annoying toxic men on Bravo. It's hard not to keep the Scandoval and Sandoval outside of your head because he's just so bad, and it was so memorable, and it was a wild. We are all survivors of the Scandoval era. Like, it was a wild, at points magical, insane, nuts, fascinating, communal experience that was also obviously infuriating and frustrating at points. It happened. But as a result, sometimes when we think of toxic men on Bravo, it's hard not to compare other instances of toxic behavior with Tom's. But I don't see a direct comparison with any of the guys on Summer House. I just think what Tom did is like in a completely different area. I don't love the comparisons of like Tom Sandoval and West, for example. I think they're totally different circumstances. I also, as a counter, don't love when people say, how dare you compare West to Tom? So that makes West somehow good. I think there's the ability here to hold many truths, which is like Tom to me, spoiler alert, you know, trigger warning if you like love Tom, and I'm so sorry. So to Victoria, whoever is volunteering as her executive assistant, like to a couple people who, for whatever reason, God bless, you have the right to your opinion, think Tom's great and is the victim of being Tom, I hear you. You could have a conversation about, is Tom deserving of the kind of attention that he received? But we're not having that conversation now. The conversation I'm having is like connecting Tom to other men who behave poorly on Bravo and equalizing them. And sometimes that's used as like, how dare you? Someone compares Wes to Tom. And then the response is, how dare you compare Wes to Tom? West is totally different from Tom. West is nowhere near as bad from Tom, aka West is good. And it's sometimes there's that little, wait a second, we swerved very, very left at the end of that drive. And we didn't necessarily need to. It's like you can hold many truths at once. Tom Sandoval is not West. West Westington, which is how I will think of him in my mind. What's West's last name? Is it Wesley Westlington? West North. Northwest. North, middle name, East, West. When we go south on that, I just think that we kind of like lose a little something, but there can be many truths at once. Obviously, Sandoval is an entirely different bucket on his own. His circumstance, the length of his relationship, the level of commitment in his relationship, his responses, weaponization of Ariana's sexuality, body, there's best friend, yada, yada. There's an awful lot with Rachel. There's an awful lot to unpack. It's also possible to say these people are not the same, but also there's some nuance here. And this person is also acting in a different but a quote unquote toxic manner that we can discuss. We can say it's not the same circumstance, but this one isn't great. Like, ask any woman who's dated a West in their lives. They're probably going to be able to connect in some way viscerally, depending on the level of contemplation and time potentially that's gone by, to say, you know, this person really hurt me and I had to do some work to work through that hurt. Like, this person did not treat me well. That still leaves a mark. We shouldn't discount that in any way. And it's frustrating to see that discounted. It's frustrating to hear a man who's, I think he said he's 29 and a half. Why do I know that? I've watched too much. I should not know that he turns 30 in 6 months, but I know that now because I watched a 45-minute interview with him before I watched tonight's episode. That's right, two times. With West, it's sometimes frustrating to watch the narrative in life of these men who we should sympathize and empathize with when they find themselves. And then on the other side, the women who are often used as some sort of way for a man to learn and be better. It's the collateral damage that I don't totally love. And I see aspects of that play out in the audience, in the conversation, obviously in the explanation from cast members of what they're watching, let alone the episodes themselves. And speaking of Tom, I am not comparing the two. I'm not saying this person is the same as this person. Not at all. I am saying that when I was watching Kyle, you could see my face right now, I was watching Kyle with some of his behavior and the way he was ever so lovingly strident in communicating to Lindsay why she was essentially the devil incarnate in part two tonight and so many episodes before, where I thought to myself, why have I seen this behavior? How have I seen it before so consistently? By someone saying, I always take the higher path and I'm going to dictate who is worse. And again, not comparing the Scandoval or Sandoval stuff here, but it is fascinating because we have watched that so many times on Vanderpump Rules with Tom Sandoval himself, of like, I am the barometer of what is ethical and good and nobody else is going to pass. And I get to it's a pass-fail course and everybody else is always going to fail, except for maybe whom I'm shtupping, but they will have their chance in the sun at some point in time. I just saw a little bit of that with Kyle. In a way where I was like, ooh, babe, knowing what we may or may not know on social, which might just be a lot of noise, it might be chaos, none of it might mean anything. It is saying something that so much of it seems realistic at points. There, you know, where there's smoke, there isn't always a fire, but you know, that smoke still does exist and someone should figure out the source. Where I thought of his behavior, as I'm thinking about the ways that people are like LOLing, or not really LOLing, honestly yelling at him on Instagram this week,
And I think a little bit about what Amanda was talking about on tonight's episode. First off, show notes for this episode, resources. For you to speak to someone via text, call, there is always someone who is available for support if you are experiencing depression or anxiety. Please, please, please reach out. And Amanda actually posted on her Instagram page and said, as tonight's episode was airing, Amanda said, "For some of us, simply existing is hard for what feels like no real reason. It can be very frustrating, defeating, and overwhelming. If you are struggling in any way, talk to someone. You may feel lost and alone now, but I promise you are not, and you are loved. Asking for help is the hardest yet easiest part. You got this." So I'm putting resources in my show notes to reiterate what she said. You are absolutely not alone. And I thought it was so important and so incredible to hear her express some of the challenges that she's faced, the current sort of place that she's at now, navigating it. That it was interesting when she was talking about the fact that she was at her lowest after BravoCon. I wish there had been a follow-up. I've actually heard her talk about this. I forget where. I want to credit Chicks in the Office. I've watched a bunch of their interviews with Bravolabs and really enjoy them. And I think it was one that they had with Amanda, but I might be fucking that up, so I apologize. If it was another interview that I watched, because there are quite a few that I've seen of late. And she was talking with I think it was with Chicks in the Office, about the fact that she finds herself to be typically a little bit of an introvert. And there is a real price that is paid when she is on such a public scale in such a magnified and definitely chaotic way at an event like BravoCon. And even saying like BravoCon, I mean, it's a singular kind of event, but it's just a lot. And she does not have the personality type, the interest, or the language of an extrovert like Kyle. I mean, it's, as she said, it's something that attracted her to him. The fact that he was so engaged, so extroverted, so passionate, so expressive. She, I think, was attracted to that and also found a little kinship in the fact that she responds differently. And maybe in some way, I think she got into this a little bit on the episode, was like, this is a way that I don't communicate. And it was one of the things that I fell in love with Kyle. And I just kind of wish that we had heard a little bit, but I know it's super fourth wall breaking, but LOL, like anybody cares at the end of the day, like break that goddamn fourth wall. I just wish we had heard a little bit more from her about what specifically about BravoCon, because I think her use of BravoCon, she didn't say November, she said BravoCon. And that is a kind of event that asks a lot of the Bravolabs involved, especially if you're not necessarily comfortable. And the different shows on Bravo are so different. Like, they're treated equally at BravoCon in a way that might not be helpful for different personality types. There are different kinds of housewives. There are housewives that are alpha, housewives that are beta. People on Below Deck have an entirely different experience filming, and as a result might feel an entirely different relationship with the audience than maybe somebody in the Housewives universe might feel. Top Chef is going to be can include very different personalities. And it's just the way the production is treated is so different in terms of crew, but also audience, as maybe Summer House. Vanderpump Rules, I probably put closer to the Housewives universe at this point. Not when it started, but I think where it is now. And for Amanda, someone who's told us that she deals with anxiety and depression and sometimes externalizing her feelings can be difficult, she really felt like she was losing herself and becoming really small, like spiritually was just losing parts of who she was and an understanding of who she wanted to be. And I just think there's a cost of BravoCon and those kinds of really, really big events where we assume that people are going to attend, but we don't really get into the conversation of like, how did that feel for you? Was that too much? I mean, in that interview, again, I think it was with Chicks in the Office, she talked about the fact that like she needed a while to recover after that. It really took a lot out of her. And I don't want to just discount that. I'm not the kind of like personality type to just kind of shrug that off. Like, I understand it, I acknowledge it, and I think it deserves, I wish we had heard a little bit more
maybe it would have been too complicated for 44 minutes plus commercials. And for some, again, ungodly reason, they decided this reunion cycle would only have two episodes instead of 46. But I wish we'd heard a little bit more. Also, as someone who grew up in an environment in which therapy was not only not discussed, but not necessarily trusted, let alone any kind of like medication. My life changed when I started therapy however many years ago. It was a couple years ago. Changed when I started seeing my psychiatrist, which was a couple years ago. Changed again when I started to take medication. My life, like the lows I experience as someone who deals with anxiety and depression, I still experience it. I'm going through some stuff, some challenges right now that I, you know, don't want to get into on this platform, because I save that for, you know, a genuinely safe space, also known as a psychiatrist's office, and a couple text threads with friends. But, you know, my antidepressant has made a huge, huge impact in my life. It doesn't mean that you're not going to experience depressive episodes or episodes of anxiety, but it does kind of just level things off. It gives you a chance to catch your breath. And it's been incredible. And I know it's tough. It can be tough to like figure out what medication works for you and what dose, but I just want to kind of normalize saying, yay, meds. I think I said that on the last episode of AG. I was like, to close this out, I just want to shout out medication. And I'm really glad Amanda did. I'm really glad it was in that episode. I think it should be normalized. You should not be ashamed of it. And actually, speaking of mental health and vulnerability, I was really proud of Jesse, hashtag what would Jesse Solomon do? Because what Jesse Solomon used to do was, and also it's his first time on reality TV, was seemingly, quote unquote, not allow himself to cry. I mean, he said at one point he didn't want to cry, that this isn't something he was saying like to cry over. Meanwhile, he's talking about fears that he may have relapse with cancer. So I'm like, if there is any time to cry, and I'm of the belief that almost every time is a good time to cry, if you need to cry, you should cry. You can cry. We can talk about why you want to cry, and that might lead to something that may or may not include a cry. But when he was talking about, like, you know, essentially this is horrifically paraphrasing what he was saying, like it wasn't, I didn't need to cry at that point, or it wasn't like crying wasn't appropriate. And he's talking literally about the period of the summer when he was afraid he was relapsing and had felt something in one of his testicles and was afraid that his cancer was back, where I'm thinking, if there is ever a goddamn time to cry, and again, every time is a potential time to cry, worrying that you may have cancer again, having already experienced it and knowing the toll it took on you, your soul, your spirit, your family, your loved ones, everyone else, yeah, you can, that's a good time to cry. I mean, like, cry. You're allowed to cry.
Sheena Marie, or as I will refer to her forever and ever, amen, Sheena Shea, has been right about a couple things in life. Number one, good as gold is a bop. Number two, apples are a delicious fruit. And also, family life is unpredictable, and a little peace of mind goes a long way. Now, as a single woman living here in New York City, Pedro Pascal, it's your time. Oftentimes, I am checking in with my friends because safety is important, and so is peace of mind. In fact, when I had a medical crisis a couple years ago, my friends didn't know where I was while I was in the hospital. The reason they knew something was wrong, true story, was because I didn't show up to a private shopping appointment downtown. That's where Life 360 comes in. Life 360 is a family connection and safety app that lets you keep track of the people and things that are most important to you. The people you need to know are okay. A focus that Sheena Shea keeps in mind. While Life 360 can be used for so many reasons, the option of ensuring that your kids are protected while giving them independence, checking on your friends, or for me, as someone who has some chronic health issues,
to ensure that people know where I am. That's why I love Life 360. Another thing I love about it is that with all of these lovely European schleps, in addition to sharing my flight information with my mom, she can see exactly when I've landed because of the app. Parents have enough to worry about. Breathe easier with Life 360. Visit life360.com or download the app today and use code Andy's Girls to get 1 month of the gold package for free, plus 15% off all tiles. That's life360.com, code Andy's Girls. It's good as gold. There is something wonderful about the change of seasons here in New York. No, not just upping my electrolytes when I go for a relatively short walk. It's the smell of summer grilling, especially for whatever reason, I don't know why, in the West Village. It's sort of my seasonal clock. When I start to smell people, that sounds crazy. When I start to smell summer grilling outside, I know summer is upon us. And listen, I can't dig into my veggie jog or veggie burger without some bread or buns. Just because it's summer doesn't mean you have to cut out all the carb-heavy foods you love. Hero Bread reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. For me, getting enough fiber and cutting down on sugar are key elements to feeling better throughout the day. Hero Bread also has mouth-watering limited edition bakes, like the popular 2 gram net carb Hero Croissant. As Luann would say, c'est bon, c'est bon. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Andy at checkout. That's Andy at hero.co.
And I think for him, dealing with, again, we talk about gender tropes, the pressure that's placed on men where they should be ashamed of emotion, or emotion itself is judged and often criticized in a gendered, through a gendered lens. And for him to say at the reunion, like, it's okay, I'm okay, I can express emotion and not be afraid or ashamed of it, like, huge. Standing ovation, mazel tov. That's incredible to hear a man who's new to this world of reality TV and being on a public platform and addressing not only emotions that may have made him nervous to discuss, but also saying it's okay for me to, like, quote unquote, Lisa Rinna style, own it. You know, he is allowed to express emotion. He is not seen, hopefully, as a weaker man. He's seen hopefully as a strong man and also a whole person. People get scared. People get nervous. People get upset, and sometimes they cry. And those are things that we express. It's so much more crucial and helpful to cry and hopefully have a loved one near you that you feel comfortable and safe with to discuss why you're crying, or at least, you know, process it out versus internalizing it. And, you know, 2 quick points I want to make. One is, I'm thinking of Amanda, and I'm hoping that she, you know, she's talking about what it is that she wants to work on, how she is finding her own identity. It's unfortunate because this week on social, it feels like some aspect of her identity is connected to a woman whose husband may or may not be stepping out and cheating on her again, which is a horrifying thing to see play out. And again, may be entirely untrue, but is still a lot of noise from a lot of people who care about Amanda, I might add. And so she's talking about the fact that she may, you know, find, a place for herself to create something, maybe as an extension of Loverboy. And I thought, oh God, no, please, please separate.
I know that that might make business sense for Lover Boy, but does it make spiritual sense to continue to find ways to collaborate with Kyle? There's another way to collaborate with Kyle, which is on a totally independent line and project that he hopefully helps you with, versus another arm of Lover Boy that keeps you inside the company. I don't know if that's going to get her what it is that she's genuinely, what it is that she genuinely is looking for. Also, Carl is a little bit of a one-off, sort of similar to when Luann says, because I've been watching some old Housewives reunion and other episodes, just completely out of order and an absolutely chaotic energetic shift this week. And I'm just kind of remembering when Luann was like, oh, yeah, and guess what? You can shut the fuck up because I'm going to star on Broadway in Chicago. And that never happened. The way that Carl was like, and I'm going to be building out a cafe and sober sports bar. I was like, what's happening? Wait, what? That's an announcement on the did anybody know that? I didn't know that. He's already pulled together investors. Like, he made it sound like it was coming together real quick. I will absolutely be there. I need to scope it out. Am I a little nervous that this is going to go the way of like Lou in Chicago, where it might not happen, or close to what happened with like the Ramona's sports bar, which never made sense. And she was essentially like licensing her name on it or something. God forbid she was actually investing. I hope she wasn't. And that kind of dissipated kind of quick. I hope that this is a success for Carl. I also thought, speaking of Carl, the conversation around Carl's job versus Lindsay's was yet another example of like, okay, the cast is coming in real hot with Linz in criticizing her, I guess, critique or questions to Carl about what was going on in his life. I understand that like he's doing some brand partnerships. She's doing a whole lot more. I didn't love Paige being like, oh, you're making like 20 or 30K more than Carl. I don't think that math is mathing. I thought even Carl himself was like, I made 70 and she's already at like 170 or something like that. It was more than $20,000, but I actually didn't think that was the point. The point is that Lindsay didn't need to take, this isn't even a drag, it's not intended to be a drag of Carl, but like Lindsay didn't need to take 9 months to spiral about what she wanted to do next. Lindsay has direction. Carl has not. So why are we criticizing Lindsay for working as an influencer? Was something underneath that where there's this like judgment of her for doing it? Lindsay has direction in her life. I think Lindsay's direction is in reality TV in a way that to me is different from Carl's. Carl's obviously been extremely successful and deserves that success for being on reality TV for this long. But I could see Lindsay like post Summer House, God forbid the show ever ends. God forbid, knock on mirror table in the cloth. The show ends. She's going to find something else in the career, I think, of entertainment. She worked in PR. She's now attempting her own on her life. And she has this job in Summer House. She's doing brand work and influencing. Carl kind of mocked it or just minimized and diminished it by being like, well, she's a woman, so she's more successful. No, she's more successful because she's more successful. And maybe that is to majority women audiences, but she's not. People aren't just paying her money because she's a lady. They're paying her money because she has direction. I think she has like a portfolio essentially of on her Instagram, on her grid of the work that she's done. And she seems focused. She knows what it is that she wants. We don't have to diminish Lindsay in order for whatever reason, like apologize on behalf of Carl. He didn't know what he was doing. She was asking him questions. She was saying, you don't know what you're doing. We're talking about cigars. We're talking about a bar you've never mentioned before. You're talking about a brick and mortar, not a good idea in New York. If you don't know what the fuck you're doing to invest money in something you have absolutely no history or understanding of is a huge fucking gamble. And also, are you just saying words out loud or do you have a genuine interest? Do you know what's behind the interest? Do you know what the actual work is that's required? You can criticize Lindsay for a multitude of reasons, a lot of which are deserved, but I don't think you can argue that this woman lacks direction. It's weird to me to say like,
well, they're kind of doing the same thing. I don't look at them in the same way. They don't treat themselves similarly. They certainly don't treat each other the same. Carl, you know, sought help. He wanted a career coach or a life coach, someone to sort of help guide him into understanding what he wants, because he doesn't know what he wants. So why are we pretending that he knows what he wants because he's making the same amount of money as Lindsay is on Summer House? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. I do get people saying, you cannot argue that Carl isn't bringing in income because a significant amount of how you guys are paying your bills are, it's not from the influencing. It is in fact from this job. So that's certainly a criticism I absolutely understand. But then we get into this other area, which is like, we are equalizing the ways that you guys identify, I guess, in the field of work, which to me doesn't entirely track. And listen, I know I've been talking for like 4 minutes or maybe 12, but, you know, just to wrap up with Carl and Lindsay's breakup and stuff, it was genuinely news to me. And it turns out also Lynn's, that Carl didn't like beep, boop, boop, like call up production and say, hey, you guys should come over and film. That was genuinely news. When Andy was like, I would like to make abundantly clear that what Lindsay was saying did not happen, I was like, oh, okay, noted. Got it. When Lindsay then followed up with, but he, you know, I didn't call production. He didn't. And Andy's like, no, that literally didn't happen. I hear you, sir. But for the rest of my goddamn life, the 300 years that I have left on this earth, also probably, you know, that feels like a miracle for where the earth is headed. But like, regardless, Robot Sarah is going to disagree with the idea that Carl was as surprised as anybody else that he ended that filming no longer having a fiance, as I call it in my head. You cannot tell me that that man who ended the breakup with a list of grievances of why he thought his fiance was a piece of shit, you cannot tell me that that man came out into that meeting with high, high hopes that this relationship would work out. And that goes for production too. Like, the idea that production, they picked up filming for a reason. So sure, did they hear that there was a complete meltdown fight? Yeah, they heard that things were not going well. So maybe they weren't given a Google Cal that said like, you know, Carl and Lindsay break up versus like, we come to film this thing. Like, the AMC commercial with Nicole Kidman, we come to this place for magic. I mean, I do think that they came to this place for magic. And I think we find ourselves somewhere in the middle. I think that Andy is telling us the truth, that Carl did not call production, and that production technically did not know that Carl was going to break up. But I think if you asked Carl's heart, considering he had an awful lot of anger toward Lindsay, felt like she was going to manipulate the situation, call herself a victim, essentially say that she's a piece of shit, it's not out of this world shocking that maybe, since Carl is asking everyone under the sun and also the sun itself if he should marry his fiance, or rather help me list the reasons why I should not, it is not a huge surprise that filmed scene ended with a breakup. I do understand why Lindsay felt blindsided, because she wasn't expecting the breakup at that point. I think a year later, maybe a year from now, some therapy, some growth, some other stuff, we ask Carl about his feelings going into that scene, because it was one, but it's also, you know, a huge moment in his life. I don't know that he would be as unsure about where this could have gone versus how he was encapsulating the sit down in the reunion. I felt like, are we all being honest here about what production's just going to swing by and pick up filming after they've wrapped for the summer? Because Carl needs to have a conversation with Kyle, which is what, according to Amanda, happened, that Kyle received word from Carl. Or no, sorry. Kyle received word from production. He needed to film a scene with Carl where Carl says, essentially, I don't know if I'm going to marry this lady. And then 2 hours later or whatever, they break up in that other film scene. I don't know, honestly. Honestly, just between us chickens, I really don't know if we can make the argument successfully that Carl had no idea that breakup was going to happen. Obviously, Andy doesn't believe that Lindsay was blindsided. Obviously, the cast is very upset with the way that Lindsay characterized the blindside and other aspects of that breakup in her sort of PR tour or whatever, her interviews after the breakup, immediately following it. And also, I think that there is a gray area here where, you know, Carl knew that this wasn't going to continue. I know that might be a huge shock to everybody else on that couch and also to Carl, but like, babe, come on. We also, P.S., in this two-part, again, that should have been 85-part long. Maybe we should just, can we just, like, someone take out some puppets and build a stage and we'll do a part three next week? In this fascinating two-part journey, did we get into any of the, like, Carl toxic behavior? We skipped straight over that. We did the, like, Lindsay fucked up, Lindsay's fucking up now. But did we get into the Carl's behavior in the kitchen? Did we really get into that? The ways that he was being, to me, manipulative and harsh, cruel at points. Certainly not understanding or interested in hearing Lindsay's perspective, defensive at every point in which she asked him questions. Felt like on those couches, like Lindsay was ultimately always going to be blamed for everything except being the one who didn't ask for the breakup, but she's being blamed for the way she reacted to it. Could we not have focused a little bit on some of Carl's toxic behavior and energy? Again, sort of connecting to the way that I started this very quick mini episode, felt like we were skipping over that. And I think that was a topic of conversation that members of the audience would have been more interested in. We put West through more as a society, as an audience and a cast, specific to the reunion than we did Carl. Some of that's because Carl wasn't in a position where he needed to answer. So we couldn't really criticize him for a non-answer. We have to rely on our memory to remember what happened during the season because it wasn't on those cards. So maybe next time we take a little look-see on who's providing the narrative of how these reunion questions are taking place. Also, was Carl trying to villainize her? I guess we'll never know. Listen, there's going to... Oh, wait, two quick things that I'm just remembering before I wrap. There will be another upcoming deep dive of Summer House with a AG guest, which I'm very excited to record. Two quick things. Public service announcement. Who is going to fuck Carl? Carl has not kissed a lady in a couple months. Should I be ashamed? Sir, we know you're not. Or maybe he is, and someone should help him through that. So who's volunteering as tribute to kiss or fuck Carl? Carl, from one single person. No. Come on over, baby. No. Christina. Xtina, if you're nasty. Someone should do that. Someone should volunteer as tribute. And also, this is sort of a technical error, except it's really not. Danielle was technically there. And the way that production fucked with her, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe this is just what was happening. The cutaways to her, like, smiling at the most awkward points, it happened at least 7 times. I'm not even kidding. It might have been, like, 17. At least 35 times, the show cut to her just awkwardly smiling. And I thought to myself, is Danielle on Chicken Shop Date? Like, where there's these, like, funny, intentionally awkward moments. Which is, like, the spirit and fun of the single best YouTube series, aside from Hot Ones, so you must watch immediately. Shout out Amelia. Does Danielle see Amelia at some point on set? Why is she so awkwardly smiling? Why is the edit around that? It was a little cheeky. I was like, okay, production, I see what you're doing. You're doing a little wink to us about Danielle's current value in the cast. And to that I say,
Amen. Listen, I know this was a quick mini episode, as I always suspect these solo episodes would be, but I had fun. I hope you did too. Listen, I'm going to put up a deep dive of some satchels on New Jersey and also Summer House. That's going to go up on the AG page this weekend. I can't, words are hard. Oh my God. What's a vowel? Is it a consonant? Who's to say? Let's litigate. Kyle will tell me the answer while screaming in my face. AG Patreon, number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes. $2 a month gets you my love and support. $5 a month is where those bonus episodes kick in. You get 2 a month. $10 a month gets you 4. And yes, there's a premium tier where you can have a private Zoom kiki with me or record a Patreon episode spectacular, the two of us. You bring your tagline, I bring a smile, and we have a good old time. So you can sign up for those tiers at Patreon. I'm having way too much fun considering it is, in fact, 1 a.m. At the AG Patreon, patreon.com/andysgirls. Is that the name of the pod? Yes, in fact, it is. And follow me on Instagram and allegedly threads at Dame Galley. Let me know your thoughts and feels on this episode, whatever the fuck it is I said out loud. Apologies in advance. And, listen, I had a real bad week. Anybody else? Raise your hand. I had a terrible week. In fact, a quite bad week. And so I hope you had a better week than I did. But I'm going to tell you what. Recording this episode made me feel the happiest that I have felt in a couple days. So thanks to you for listening to this episode, because you got me out of bed, spiritually and literally, also literally. And I feel good. Having said a couple things, I hope you feel okay having listened to them. Thanks for being on this journey. Sometimes I get a little wackadoo. Sometimes I cry. Crying is okay. It's human. And, you know, we just keep trucking along on this long and truck called life. Wow, words. Just want to thank you for listening to this sassy little social experiment, because it brings me a lot of joy, and hopefully it gives you a little bit of an escape. And listen, guys, let me know your thoughts and feels. DM me those satchels, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness, Kelly Klorn-Ben-Simone. You guys often tell me that I am terrible at wrapping episodes, and I go on and on, and tonight is a prime example. So once again, I say amen. Thanks for listening, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.